free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Phil Reitinger, Deputy Undersecretary of DHS's National Protection and Programs Directorate. You envision Einstein relieving CIOs of a lot of the daily operational things they have to do?
Absolutely not. There's going to be no removal of operational responsibilities from agencies. In fact, we want to go in the exact opposite direction. We want to enable the key players in the private sector and in agencies to be more effective.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center, security, and collaboration strategy and solutions. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Shay Assad. Shay has just been named the Director of Defense Pricing. Shay, as most of you listeners know, has been serving for several years and as the Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy, DPAP, and also Shay's former deputy, Dick Jinman, who is now going to be acting in Shay's role at DPAP, is also on the show. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Roger. It's great to hear you again.
Hi, Roger.
And congratulations are in order with your new positions. Shay, can you tell us a little bit about the creation of this new? It's a new, brand new office within AT&L, and it's a new role. But I think from knowing you over the years and what you've been focusing on, I think it's something that sort of dovetails to what you've been concerned about and working on in DPAP in general. Anyway, can you talk a little bit about your new position and your new role?
Can, Roger, but just let me clarify one thing for you. Dick is not acting. He, in fact, will be the Director of Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy.
Thank you for clarifying that, and Dick, congratulations.
Thank you. Roger, the reason this came about was Dr. Carter and I were talking about the Better Buying Power initiatives and how we were doing with regard to implementation, because he is really focused on ensuring that the field, that the message is properly communicated to the field and that, in fact, they're following through on his initiatives. And, I, in talking with him, I told him that the reality of life was with the emphasis, and properly so, that needed to be placed on contingency contracting these days and with all of the duties associated with defense procurement and acquisition policy, I really felt that in order to place a proper emphasis on the Better Buying Power initiatives and on pricing contracts in general, that it would probably be wise to split the responsibilities a little bit within the existing DPAP function. The reality was that the DPAP role had expanded quite a bit from the time I took it on to where it was presently today. And so Dr. Carter thought about it. He agreed with it. And basically what has happened is, and Dr. Carter is, for your listeners, is the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics.
Shay, that's very good, Shay. You're doing my job for me right there. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome, Roger. In the past, Roger, for your listeners, Roger and I have been friends for a long time. He's accused me of doing that quite a bit. In any event, the reality is that fundamentally what's happening, Roger, is that I will be focused on the pricing, cost price and finance aspects of acquisition, as well as supporting programs, and you know, through the Defense Acquisition Board, and in addition, you know, I'll be responsible for advising Dr. Carter on acquisition strategies for multi-years and things of that nature. And then finally, the workforce, which has been my passion, and so I will continue to carry through on that. Dick, on the other hand, will be responsible, and he's done a great job to date with this part of the DPAP responsibility, is contingency contracting, e-business, and Dick will also be responsible for the acquisition regulation side of DPAP. So from now on, there are any issues related to regulation, Dick will be involved in. In terms of policy, I will advise Dr. Carter on pricing and profit policies, and Dick will advise Dr. Carter on all of the matters related to acquisition contracting policy. And that's kind of how we've split the responsibilities. I'm very excited about this because there are a number of things that we're doing to improve the capability of the workforce and the capability of the department as it relates to, you know, the price we pay for the goods and services we buy and increasing the value to the taxpayers for every dollar spending on their behalf.
Shay, you know, it sort of sounds to me, just thinking about back when I was in government and talking to you and working with you, is that, you know, at the time, I can remember, and over the last 4 or 5 years around the 2006-2007 time frame, you were talking a lot about, you know, reinvigorating, creating this pricing analysis capability, or reinstituting that within DPAP. And it almost sounds like, you know, you've taken that piece of it and it's gone to complete fruition here in terms of, okay, now it's your DOD is standing up a sort of a separate unit to deal with that because you've had the opportunity to grow that. Is that sort of accurate? Or
that's absolutely right on the money, Roger. Yeah, this has been in the making for a while. We've now a good deal of our pricing capability expansion will be within DCMA, under the leadership of Charlie Williams. And so this is, I'm very excited about what it is that we've been able to put into play here. And I'm absolutely convinced that it's going to translate into savings for the taxpayers.
Well, you mentioned, you know, some of the steps you've taken in that pricing area. Can you elaborate a little bit on the measures that you have taken?
Yes. I've been working very closely with Charlie Williams at DCMA as well as Pat Fitzgerald at DCAA. And we're taking several steps, one of them being Charlie's actually, you know, when we developed the acquisition workforce growth plan, Charlie and I included sufficient funding in there to hire about 300 pricing analysts. And Charlie has, in fact, carried through on that. And so now we've got, over the last 18 months, we've brought about 300 price analysts on board, and now we are deploying them in a manner such that we can maximize the return for the taxpayers. The other thing that we're doing, Roger, is we've never had, across the Department of Defense, an integrated capability in terms of data analysis to understand what is it that we're doing in the different buying commands, what are the buying behaviors or the selling behaviors of the contractors that we're dealing with, how can we ensure that we are coordinating and we understand the practices of the contractors we deal with so that we can maximize, you know, our buying position within the Department of Defense. DCMA will be a key player in that role. We've already established, for example, a website and a contract analysis tool that enables us to examine in real time a view of all of the rates being proposed by contractors, both historically and in a forward pricing environment. And we're beta testing that right now. That will subsequently be expanded so that just the deals, the essence of the deals that be online and available to anyone who is, in fact, contracting officers, that is, who need that data and need access to that data will be able to get it, and in real time. So I'm pretty excited that on the roles that DCMA will be playing.
Okay, so that sounds like the system, you know, just in, from practical perspectives, you'll have contracting officers out in the field, and they may be negotiating some sort of service deal. They'll be able to use this tool to get a sense. It's essentially, you'll have an online market survey of rates and, you know, pricing agreements and that sort of thing to be able to get a sense on what, you know, a fair and reasonable price for a particular task is. Is that fair?
Yeah.
It sounds like a pretty powerful tool.
Roger, we've never had anything like this, and it's going to take us a while to bring it to full fruition. I think somewhere between, you know, 12 and 24 months before DCMA's complete capability is brought on the table. But once it is, it's going to be a very powerful tool.
And Dick, just turning to, and again, congratulations on your new position, Dick. When Shay talks about the pricing, you know, there's that analytical piece to it, but there's also, and with your responsibilities, you're going to be focusing in part on the, as Shay mentioned, on the regulations. How do you see that playing into creating the framework for, you know, for doing this, the pricing and taking a look at it? How is it playing out in the Better Buying Initiative in terms of what you're doing from a regulation perspective?
Well, certainly each of the decisions that's made within Better Buying that either results in a policy memo or direction, we will either implement it into DoD 5002 so it is formalized for program management, or we'll put it into the DFARS so that it's there for the contracting officers to use, either or we'll put it into PGI if it's specifically direction just to contracting officers and doesn't impact the public.
Well, we're up on a break. We have to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Shay Assad, the new director for defense pricing, and Dick Ginman, the new director for defense procurement and acquisition policy. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission, yet they all share a common vision: to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions, and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
What if learning a new language was as easy as watching your favorite TV show or playing your favorite video game? What if, while you were having your morning coffee, you could learn how to speak or read a new language? Well, now you can. Introducing an all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the all-new Rosetta Stone software is now easier than ever before. You can learn your new language on your computer, then practice in your car or on your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing a single word. It's never been easier to learn a new language. And to celebrate, Rosetta Stone is giving away free demo CD-ROMs of their all-new language immersion technology. To get yours absolutely free, call now, 1-800-900-2599. Immerse yourself in your new language. Call now and receive your free demo CD-ROM of the all-new Rosetta Stone software. 1-800-900-2599. For your free demo, call 1-800-900-2599.
Have you missed a key step in planning for your retirement? You may have. Studies show that at least 70% of people over age 65 will need long-term care services at some point in their lives. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect your lifestyle and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Now through June 24th, the FELTIP is holding its first open season for new applicants since 2002. Learn more about this opportunity at ltcfeds.com.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. What are the 7 management imperatives all government executives need to follow? What is FAA's next generation air transportation system? How is New York City shaping a government that's customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? How is DOD improving its business operations? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week to find out.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest is Caroline Adams Miller, an amazing coach and a best-selling author of Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Tune in to listen to Caroline. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Vienna, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Mobile technology is revolutionizing government. Learn what strategies are being adopted to help citizens and federal agencies access information on the go at AFSEA Bethesda's Executive Breakfast, June 23rd, at the Bethesda North Marriott. Hear from Gwen Costin of the GSA, Lieutenant Colonel Anmi Torres of DISA, and other federal leaders as they discuss application development, cultural hurdles, and the security implications of the ongoing mobile revolution. To register, visit afseabethesda.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Shay Assad, the new director for defense pricing, and Dick Ginman, the new director of DPAP. And we've been talking about Dick's new position and the better buying initiative and new pricing focus at DOD. Continuing that discussion, focusing on pricing, and one of the things you did mention in the first segment was pricing and profit, and your responsibilities over that. Can you give us your thoughts on on profit and how it does work, how it should work, where you see that going in defense policy?
Absolutely, Roger. The first thing I'd like to say is that the better buying power initiatives are not at all a war on profitability of contractors. That's not what this is about. What it's all about is trying to understand how can we use profit to properly motivate contractors to reduce the prices that we pay. I put it very simply to the folks out in the field. If we're paying $100 for a product and included in that $100 is $10 of profit, we'd much rather pay $90, and if the contractor made $15 as a result of it, we'd be okay with that. And so what we're trying to do is develop a profit policy and pricing policies that motivate contractors to reduce costs and to reward those contractors who, in fact, do that. It's a pretty simple concept. And what we're telling our folks in the field, look, if the prices of what we pay are going down, then the profitability of the contractors who are doing that, their profitability should go up. On the other hand, if the prices are going up, then I don't expect the profitability to go up with it. And so, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to align profitability and performance and ensure that we use profitability as a tool to reduce cost and ultimately reduce the price that the taxpayers are paying for the goods and services that we're buying on behalf of the warfighters.
Well, from your perspective, what are some of those key aspects in aligning, you know, that profit and performance?
One of the things that we realized, Roger, and the reason why we've kind of we're using award fee contracts a lot less than we have in the past is because what we figured out or determined was that in many ways we were paying profitability for as a result of a process that someone was going through and not focused on the outcome. What was the good or service that we actually wanted to buy, and did we get what we wanted? So where we're headed is to ensure that when we establish and write contracts, that the profitability is associated with the outcome. It was the product or good and service that we contracted for provided? Was it provided on time? Did it meet all of its quality, all the quality aspects of the contract? If those answers are yes, then, you know, the contractor should do okay. If those answers are no, then we don't expect to pay the same kind of profit levels for someone who's performing poorly or performing in an inadequate way versus someone who is.
One other thing I also wanted to ask you about in this context of the RFP is I know you DPAP came out with sort of source selection guide that's going out sort of DOD wide. What was the thought behind that? Was the idea to try to create some consistency for industry in terms of what the expectations will be when you compete for a procurement? What did you find that sort of drove you to do your source selection guide? Because I think that's part of, to me, when I think of requirements, it's what's to be performed, but also it's that framework for that competition and how you're ultimately going to pick who or whatever pool of contractors may be doing the project.
Yeah, we had a dual purpose in putting forward that guide, and I'll let Dick talk about some of his findings because he spent a significant amount of time working with senior acquisition executives in the field putting the guide together. But the primary purpose was to ensure that we had one way of doing business within the department so that contractors who were doing business with us who were involved in a source selection would at least understand that the process, in fact, was going to be singular and consistent. And so we spent a significant amount of time doing that. The second purpose was to ensure that we were developing and training contracting officers and acquisition professionals who could easily transition from one service or defense agency to another because there'd be no difference in the way they conducted business. And so that it wouldn't be a sense of this is the way the Air Force conducts source selection or this is the way the Navy does it or this is the way the Army does it. So it was really an intention to set up a singular process. And I'll let Dick talk a little bit about some of the findings and that led us to taking this particular position on. Dick?
Sure.
Hey, Dick, I apologize, but we're going to have to take a break. But when we come back, we will focus on your findings and how they translated into the source selection guide. But again, we do have to take a break. When we return, we'll be talking more with Shea Assad and Dick Ginman. And you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is texting getting way out of hand? You know, I can't... Oh, please. Oh, that is funny. Where was I? Oh, yes, about texting. Pardon me. LOL, you are my BFF. So, like I was saying...
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
A non-event is how Army Vice Chief of Staff Peter Corelli describes the training that U.S. troops are getting on a new regulation allowing gay people to serve openly in the military. Most of the problems and trouble that had been predicted appears not to have materialized. The Pentagon is avoiding giving up details on the training because of concern that too much attention could inflame the issue. All of the training should be complete by mid-August. 2.2 million people need to go through the training. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Airink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Airink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Maryland truly is the ground zero of cybersecurity. I would like to see students that are coming through this program that are cybersecurity professionals, practitioners, and scholars.
That's Dr. Rick Forno, Graduate Program Director for UMBC Cybersecurity Programs. Attend a free webinar Thursday, June 9th at 1 p.m. Dr. Forno will highlight UMBC's cybersecurity programs and talk about the upcoming Maryland Cyber Challenge and Conference in Baltimore this October. For more information, visit umbc.edu/cyber.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that can save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have been talking to, Shay Assad, the Director for Defense Pricing, and Dick Ginman, the Director of DPAP. And when we left the last segment, Dick was just about to tell us a little bit about, you know, what he found when he did survey of the services and DoD activities with regard to source selection, which ultimately fed into the new source selection guide that that DPAP issued under Shay and Dick's guidance. Dick, go ahead.
So as we've been going through, we initiated peer reviews probably two and a half years ago, and as we've gone from agency to agency, we kept finding significant differences in the way the different agencies addressed source selection and how they went through that process. So one of our objectives was to come up with a consistent approach to what would be evaluated, how it's evaluated, and then how it's documented. I think perhaps the most significant areas are for past performance and technical and the evaluation of risk, coming up with a common set of definitions that will be used across the board. The other significant change, I believe, is that some of the agencies in their Source Selection Advisory Council. This is the group that the Source Selection Evaluation Board evaluates the individual proposals. The SSAC is the group that then compares and contrasts those proposals and makes a recommendation to the Source Selection Authority. The person will make the final decision. In some of the agencies, the SSAC was an advisory group that didn't compare and contrast and didn't effectively provide guidance over the SSEB and how they conducted the procurement. So there's now a requirement within all of the agencies that the SSAC clearly has a responsibility, one, to oversight what the Source Selection Evaluation Board is doing, and two, to make a formal recommendation and to document that recommendation to the Source Selection Authority, which is going to make the final decision. The other comment that I would make is that a reason behind this was we found in Iraq and then as we moved into Afghanistan and source selections where the Army is the executive agent, many of the people were from the Air Force or Navy that were serving contracting officer positions, that they had to be retrained in the different philosophies for how we did it. So now, particularly in a contingency operation, where they're doing a source selection, and while we try and bring those back and do them in a reach-back cell at Rock Island for Afghanistan and for Iraq, many of them are, in fact, done in theater. And what this does is it gives us the training that people have when they go. We don't need to undo training and then reestablish it for the people who are there. They all come in with the same base.
You know, from an industry perspective, and you know, just in my short time being out of government, you know, one of the things that that I have to commend you guys on with regard to doing a source selection guide is that, you know, a lack of sort of consistency. You just sort of observed, like, you had to retrain folks to actually be able to do the acquisition. You know, and there's no, you know, that doesn't really make sense from an operational perspective. Everybody would be playing on the same page. But from an industry perspective, one of the things that I've learned since I left government is that, you know, a lack of consistency and creating uncertainty costs industry money. You know, having to deal with different situations, you have, you know, contracting officers using, you know, completely different approaches, and, you know, having to respond to each of those. Where if you have a uniform approach, it streamlines the process and makes it more efficient. So, I mean, it's a win for, you know, the government and its operations, but I think ultimately it's also a win for industry. And then ultimately, that's a win for the taxpayer in the long run. So I think it's a great step. And, Dick, you were talking a little bit about contingency operations in Iraq and what you learned. And can you And I know that's one of your chief responsibilities. Can you talk a little bit about what you're doing in that area?
So I think from a contingency operation perspective, two major areas. One is the work that we do in direct support of the warfighters. We spend a significant amount of time as the warfighter identifies a requirement. We call them a JUON, a Joint Urgent Operational Need, comes into the building and bringing together, you know, the individual services and the different agencies is a united front Dr. Carter meets with a senior group of people. It's every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks, and we go through all of these requirements and what we're doing. The theater is included in those discussions. And my team spends a significant amount of time working with the individual service contracting officers and program managers to ensure that we've got that in Lincoln, that we are meeting the needs as quickly as possible, and certainly within a 12-month period of time, so that we get what the warfighter needs. The second part where we spend a significant amount of time is in support of the military training mission Afghanistan, MTMA, led by Lieutenant General Caldwell. It's over the FY 10, 11, and 12 budgets will be $33 billion of funds flowing through to develop and support the Afghan National Police and the Afghan National Army. So we spend a fair amount of time with how is that money being spent? Are we using appropriate acquisition strategies to buy those things? Are we providing the staffing to NTMA, both from a contracting perspective, from an auditor perspective, from a DCMA perspective, to ensure that they've got the resources that we can provide the appropriate oversight and management to it. A significant lesson learned from Iraq was not having sufficient oversight, having a sufficient number of contracting officer representatives that in fact understood it. General Petraeus actually issued a letter probably 7 or 8 months ago to his commanders saying that contracting is the commander's business. And it's a training and education perspective. And I think we've made great strides from an appropriate use of the funds, how we're oversighting the funds, and that we're in fact getting there. And then I think the other area we spend some time is a program called Afghan First, which is actually developing companies that are capable of meeting it so that we're creating jobs in Afghanistan and we're creating opportunities for the people in Afghanistan as well.
Right now, actually, we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Shay Assad, Director of Defense Pricing, and Dick Jinman, Director of Defense Procurement Acquisition Policy. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Every government agency has a distinct mission, yet they all share a common vision, to better serve the American people. And it's been the determination of every federal employee that's made this vision a reality and our country what it is today. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to have helped government clients meet their missions and prouder still to continue providing support. Today, Booz Allen's 20,000 dedicated professionals have the expertise, the experience, and the solutions to help you continue adapting to ever-changing public service pressures while achieving your goals. So whether you're responding to today's demands or looking beyond the horizon, count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Booz Allen Hamilton, delivering results that endure. BoozAllen.com. That's BoozAllen.com.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
What if learning a new language was as easy as watching your favorite TV show or playing your favorite video game? What if, while you were having your morning coffee, you could learn how to speak or read a new language? Well, now you can. Introducing an all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the all-new Rosetta Stone software is now easier than ever before. You can learn your new language on your computer, then practice in your car or on your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing a single word. It's never been easier to learn a new language. And to celebrate, Rosetta Stone is giving away free demo CD-ROMs of their all-new language immersion technology. To get yours absolutely free, call now, 1-800-900-2599. Immerse yourself in your new language. Call now and receive your free demo CD-ROM of the all-new Rosetta Stone software. 1-800-900-2599. For your free demo, call 1-800-900-2599.
If sitting at a desk, working at a computer, or drinking coffee was a good workout, most of us would be in awesome shape. Unfortunately, they aren't. But that doesn't mean if you're behind a desk, you can't go move around some. Kaiser Permanente suggests organizing a lunchtime walking group. Nothing revolutionary, just a group of coworkers that walk every day at lunch. It doesn't matter where, what matters is the walking. Just 30 minutes a day. Studies show that employees who move around and get exercise feel less stressed, lose weight, and lower their risk for chronic conditions. When employers choose Kaiser Permanente, the walking group is just one of the many ideas and tools that we provide to help employees stay healthier and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Phil Reitinger, Deputy Undersecretary of DHS's National Protection and Programs Directorate. You envision Einstein relieving CIOs of a lot of the daily operational things they have to do?
Absolutely not. There's going to be no removal of operational responsibilities from agencies. In fact, we want to go in the exact opposite direction. We want to enable the key players in the private sector and in agencies to be more effective.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Shay Assad, the Director of Defense Pricing, and Dick Ginman, the Director for Defense Procurement Acquisition Policy. And I know DOD had its procurement conference in May this year. I think it was the week of May 9th. I wish I could have been there. I had to go to the GSA Expo. They happened to be at the same time this year. But, Shay, how did that event go?
Roger, it was really terrific. We had over 1,400 folks, entry-level, journey-level, and senior-level participants, as well as about 150 folks from industry. Because what we're trying to accomplish at these conferences is really twofold. The first is to ensure that we have legitimate and meaningful training opportunities for folks, and there were 35 different training sessions going on, taught all by DAU or professional instructors. It was really great. And then secondly, we have what we call a senior leader offsite, where we bring every SES 06 and general officer who runs contracting command together. we spend a half day with industry, and then we spend about a day ourselves talking about issues and matters that are of significant importance to either of us. And I think industry, the thing that I was very pleased about was the across the board, the input we got from industry with this. This was the best one ever, that they really appreciated the opportunity for the dialogue, because they not only were they allowed to participate in the senior leader offsite, they and their folks were allowed to participate in the entire training event.
It sounds like it was a wonderful event. Again, I'm sorry I couldn't have been there. But conflicts, they get.
Well, we won't hold it, Roger, unless you promise to be there.
Next. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
I'll hold you hostage then, right?
All right.
Are you thinking about expanding it, or what are your plans for the future?
Yes, I think we are, because the entry level, especially, and the journeyman level folks, we're getting some significant feedback from them about the benefit that they thought they had from it. And, a good deal of our workforce, Roger, is on the 0 to 10 year side of the street.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we have to ensure that we expand, our training opportunities for those folks. So I think you will see this become even a larger event than it presently is.
Yeah, and the thing that struck me is when you talked about, from my perspective, right, where I sit right now, and I think it's such a positive thing, is that communication with industry. You can see the power of being able to talk about, common interest, common concerns, and trying to figure out and better understand how actions on both sides impact, the other party. When you're doing these transactions, what is the feedback you're getting, and what are you focusing on with regard to enhancing communication with the private sector?
Well, one of the things that we're doing and that I've been doing, Roger, which is kind of unusual, but frankly, I think industry has really appreciated it. I've offered to actually sit down with senior leaders as well as the senior contracting officials within a corporation and spend a half day talking about better buying power and basically speaking to them just as I would speak to our workforce, so that they understand straight from the top what it is that we're trying to accomplish and why. And I think they are very appreciative of the candor. I think they're very appreciative of the opportunity to have a meaningful exchange. There's a recognition that we each sit on a different side of the table. Having said that, there's no reason why we shouldn't have a professional and businesslike and cordial relationship between us while being at arm's length. But nevertheless, I think they really appreciate the communication. And frankly, we've got to do more of it, not less, across the board.
With that in mind, I know, Dan Gordon launched that Mythbusters campaign. I'm getting more, I guess, at a tactical level. I mean, there's a strategic picture and that communication, but at a tactical level with regard to the Mythbusters campaign, and earlier in the show we talked about requirements of development. Are you guys looking at anything new or different with regard to communication with industry during that requirements development phase and the early stages of the procurement?
Yes, and I think that this idea that we do want to promote more industry days, Roger. And a lot of this comes, as you well know, and those folks who have got experience in this profession, a lot of it comes with confidence in your own self-confidence in your ability to conduct these discussions while keeping a level playing field. And I think we've got a bunch of folks in the field who don't feel confident in their capability, and as a result, they're very reluctant to have discussions in a manner such that we're getting the information we need and industry is getting a better understanding of our requirement. So we're really spending a lot of time with our contracting officers encouraging them to spend time discussing the requirement with contractors, there's nothing inappropriate about it, that the better that contractors understand our requirement, the more precise we are in exacting about what we want, the better proposals and the better competition we're going to get.
Yeah, I back in, 20 years ago, I worked for an organization called the Federal Computer Acquisition Center. Before it was that, it was the Air Force Computer Acquisition Center. And, they had very seasoned contracting staff. And, they had a regular policy of sitting down and meeting with industry to talk about requirements, and they would meet one-on-one. But they had the training, the experience. They understood what they could and couldn't do. And I think that, the developing that capability, it sounds like, within the contracting core is something that you're taking a look at. And with that, can you talk a little bit about what you are doing with regard to the acquisition workforce? And by the way, that communication was very effective. So I think you're definitely that's definitely going down the right road in terms of trying to enhance and encourage that communication early in the process. But the acquisition workforce, can you talk a little bit about what you're doing there?
Yeah, Roger, we've actually brought now on board about 8,600 folks, we've still got another 4,000 or 5,000 folks that we're going to hire. I'm very excited about that. The workforce is a passion of mine. And Frank Anderson, the former president of Defense Acquisition University, and myself, kind of the key guys behind ensuring that we develop that acquisition strategy. And what feels so good about it is that we're seeing it come to fruition. I'm very excited about it because we're not just hiring younger folks or folks with little experience. The reality is, Roger, the breakout is about 65% entry-level folks, about 34% journeyman level, and then 1% very senior folks. So was kind of how we set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're right about, we're within 1%. Of the 65 and 1% of the 34 of getting to where we wanted to be. So we're pretty excited that we're in fact filling in the workforce with a good mix of folks.
We only have about a minute left, Jay and Dick, and you both can chime in on this. And you guys, I think, have had very long careers, even longer than mine, in government service, and just in the procurement field in general. If there was something you could point to that you've seen in terms of one of the biggest changes for good in the system over your careers, I know it's a hard question to answer, but is there something in particular you could point to that you think has been, this was a really good fundamental change? For me, I think of, my background, I think of commercial item acquisition. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think Dr. Carter's Better Buying Power initiatives, and I'm very sincere about that. I mean, that was a statement from a senior leader that I think will have a profound impact on how we buy goods and services throughout the department. And the last thing I would like to do, Roger, if you wouldn't mind,
sure,
is... there's a group of folks that I feel very passionate about and who I think are a little bit concerned that now that my new role is played, that maybe they'll get forgotten. And that's those folks who are severely disabled and blind, the Ability One folks.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know that I will continue to be their advocate. And now they get it kind of a double punch because Dick will also be their foremost advocate, as I will, in ensuring that folks who are disabled and blind get a fair shot and opportunity to provide goods and services to our warfighter.
Well, it sounds like they're actually getting two for the price of one there, right? Getting sort of double teamed there now. Well, that's a great thing. With that, I guess we're out of time. I want to thank Shay Assad and Dick Ginman for joining me on the show today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. All of Federal News Radio's exclusive interviews and shows are archived online at federalnewsradio.com. Listen to an interview again or share it with friends. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOP.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Top story this hour, President Obama will give German Chancellor Angela Merkel the nation's highest civilian honor. She'll receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom at a White House state dinner tonight. The president says not long ago it would have seemed unlikely for a black president to welcome a female chancellor.
It's obvious that neither of us looks exactly like the leaders who preceded us. But the fact that we can stand here today as President of the United States and as Chancellor of a united Germany is a testament to the progress, the freedom that is possible in our world.
Despite the nice words, the two leaders will discuss several policy differences between the two countries. People in Arizona are running away from wildfires. Ruth Blakeslee says she was told to evacuate her home in the town of Greeley.